And in 1 Timothy and in Titus, we have instructions that Paul gives these men on how to choose men for leadership, how to choose people for leadership. We might call them qualifications of an elder. The section we're going to look at this morning, it talks about, King James word is bishop. It's the word is episkopos in the Greek. It means an overseer. And that's where you get the word, the episcopal word episcopal. In Titus, talking about the same group of men, of leaders in the church, Paul calls them elders. And though typically the idea of an elder in the church is means an old guy, I don't know how much to qualify that. Though it typically means an old guy, the point is not really about age. It's about maturity. It's about maturity. So if you wanted to give this morning's message a title, see, I'm not going to just... My purpose of this morning of looking at this section is not just so that you can know whether you should be an elder or not. No. Marks of maturity. That's kind of what I would title this morning's message, marks of maturity. These are things that we all ought to be aiming at. What it means to be a mature Christian. Sometimes older is better. A young man who was an avid golfer found himself with a few hours to spare one afternoon. He figured if he hurried up and played fast, he could get in 9 holes before he had to head home. Just as he was about to tee off, an old gentleman shuffled onto the tee and asked if he could accompany the young man as he was golfing alone. Not being able to say no, he allowed the old gent to join him. To his surprise, the old man played fairly quickly. He didn't hit the ball that far, but plodded along consistently and didn't waste much time. Finally, they reached the 9th fairway, and the young man found himself with a tough shot. There was a large pine tree right in front of his ball, and directly between his ball and the green. After several minutes of debating how to hit the shot, the old man finally said, "You know, when I was your age, I'd hit the ball right over that tree." With that challenge placed before him, the youngster swung hard, hit the ball up, right smack into the top of the tree trunk, and it thudded back to the ground, not a foot from where it had originally lay. Then the old man offered one more comment. "Of course, when I was your age, that pine tree was only 3 feet tall." Sometimes older is better. Maturity is better. Let's look at this chat. Let's look at this section. 1 Timothy chapter 3. This is a true saying. If a man desire the office of a bishop, an elder, a pastor, we would put them all in this category. If a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good work, a beautiful thing. It's a good thing. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, no greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that ruleth his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. With all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride he fall in the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. And that's kind of his list for what he calls here a bishop or entitled. We would also put pastors on that list. So, back in verse 2, he starts the list. A bishop then must be blameless. Now, usually when I ask guys to be elders and I tell them to read over this section, nobody can get past this first one. an elder must be blameless. The word blameless here, it means you can't get a hold of something. That's kind of the idea. The root idea of this word, you can't get a hold of something. It's kind of like, well, here, let me put in a plug for men's retreat. Up at Green Valley, up where we're going next weekend, they have a bunch of stuff that we're going to get to play with in the afternoon. And remember all that stuff? Remember the climbing wall, guys? They've got this great climbing wall, this big, huge, you know, tall, you know, it's just... It's a wall. It's, you know, with, and they've got safety harnesses. Ladies, don't worry about it. It's very safe stuff. You know, you fall, you just strangle yourself. No. You know, it's all very, very safe. But on this wall, they've got, screwed into the wall, they've got little knobs and little rocks and things. And it's, you know, you're supposed to be like you're climbing up a rock face or something. And you've got to be able to grab a hold of something, put your foot on something, and make your way up this straight wall. It's a climbing wall. And the idea of the word blameless is that there's nothing to grab onto. There's nothing to grab onto. It's like, well, the enemy wants to grab a hold of you and shake you up, but he can't get a hold of anything on you. That's the word blameless here. You can't grab a hold of things. I would put it this way. This would be the way I would put the application, the lesson. Maturity can't be criticized. Maturity can't be criticized. You know, to be honest, there isn't a single person alive today who qualifies as being totally blameless. We all got something we can grab a hold, you know, people can grab a hold of. And even if there isn't, people will make things up. You know, it just happens, okay? But in a mature Christian, you find that there's, the enemy will find there's less and less things he can grab a hold on in their life. It's a mark of maturity. Maturity can't be criticized. It's a part of growing up. Donald Gray Barnhouse, in his commentary on Romans, writes this: the true Christian never has to give up anything. Of course, I'm not speaking of sins. But there are a lot of things that will give him up. They will go one by one. There will be no grief. It will be the way childish occupations are abandoned. I never had to give up playing with tops and marbles. I never had to come to the place where I said, oh, I am a big boy now, and big boys don't play marbles, so I will make a great effort to give up playing marbles. It did not happen that way. One day I was playing marbles with a group of small boys, and some older boys came by. They looked at me and said, hey, kid, can you field a ball? Sure I can, I replied with more vigor than accuracy. Well, they said, we are short a fielder. Get out there and see what you can do. I went out and was ready to play my head off to keep up with the older fellows. When it was my turn to bat, I was ready to swing till I burst and to run till I dropped and do all that I could to keep up with the bigger company I was in. And when the game was over and we older boys, as I then classed myself, walked down the street past the little fellows who were playing marbles, I did not go back to marbles. I graduated. I did not give up marbles. Marbles gave me up. That's maturity. As we grow in the Lord, the little knobs on the climbing wall disappear. There's less for the enemy to grab a hold of. Not because I necessarily have to work real hard and get the screwdriver out and take this thing apart, but because I've got other things to go on to, and God changes my interests, and I no longer care about those things anymore. It's a mark of maturity. High in the Alps is a monument raised in honor of a faithful guide who perished while ascending a peak to rescue a stranded tourist. Inscribed on that memorial are these words: "He died climbing." He died climbing. A maturing, growing Christian should have the same kind of attitude right up to the end of his life. That we just keep growing and growing and growing. Maturity can't be criticized. It's all about growing up. He says in verse 2, "A bishop then must be blameless." Then he says, "the husband of one wife." You could translate the phrase literally, "he's a one-woman man." He's a one-woman man. Heard this, I've heard this twisted and used all sorts of ways, but basically Paul is talking in a day when people practice polygamy. And that's the issue. I don't think the issue is whether you've been divorced or remarried. I don't think the issue is whether... I've heard some people even twist this to say you can't be an elder or a pastor if you're single, because you aren't a one-woman man. Well, you know, that's silly. Paul the Apostle doesn't qualify because he was single. So what are you going to do? You're going to say, "Paul, you can't be a pastor in our church because you're single?" No, that's ridiculous. The issue is that you are a one-woman man. Mature Christian works on his marriage. A mature Christian works on his marriage. Let's look at 5:22. Ephesians 5:22. Your marriage is supposed to be a picture of Jesus and his love for the church. Your marriage is supposed to be a picture of Jesus and his love for the church. And if you are a leader, if you are a mature person, people will look to you more. And Paul writes in Ephesians 5:22, he says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." See, the things that go on in a marriage are patterned after, are a picture of what happens between Jesus and us. And as I said, as a mature Christian, you are setting an example for other people to follow. I came across an interesting thing about President Coolidge. See, people are going to watch you. People are going to follow your example. Once President Coolidge invited some friends from Vermont to dine at the White House. They were worried about their table manners, so they decided to do everything their host did. They're following his example. All went well until the coffee was served. Coolidge poured his coffee into the saucer. All the guests did the same. The president added sugar and cream. All the guests did the same. You can imagine this whole table of people watching. Okay. The president added sugar and cream. So did the visitors. Then Coolidge leaned over and placed his saucer on the floor for the cat. Oops. We're all going to give coffee to the cat? We are examples. And as mature Christians, your marriage is to be an example. And so the mark of a mature Christian is one who is working on his marriage. His marriage is a priority. Her marriage is a priority. Because, see, people are going to look at you. They're going to get an idea that this is what Christianity is all about. The mark of a mature Christian is that they ought to be working on their marriage. I've I've seen a lot of heartbreaks. I've seen a lot of marriages where people just kind of settle for mediocre. You don't need to do that. You don't need to do that at all. God has great things. I mean, marriage is hard. Isn't it? Any of you who are married who don't think marriage is hard, I don't know. It's hard, but it's good. Oh, it's good. Don't stop working on it. Don't let it be something in your life that you just settle for. You know, it's miserable around here, but we just kind of put up with it. You know, you've heard of people who stay together for the kids' sake or whatever. You know what? That's good for the kids. I'm glad you're staying together for the kids' sake. Don't get me wrong. That is good. But you don't have to settle for that kind of junk. You can make it great. How can you make it great? Well, we just read an interesting passage. Very interesting passage. I always have loved to pass to just skip over the part which says, wives, be submissive to your husbands. You get the dirtiest looks, you know. But you know what? You know what, gals? I would challenge you to try it. I know a group of gals in our church, a book called, A Woman After God's Own Heart. Is that the name of the book? I think that's the name of the book. And amazing things happen when we do things God's way. Gals, try it. Just try it. Doesn't mean you're less of a woman. Doesn't mean that you're less of a person. Doesn't mean that your husband is the Almighty. No, it means that you are a woman who's learning to walk by faith. That's the way Peter wrote it in 1 Peter 3. That you're this is the way the women of old, the women of faith, used to live. And it's a way of teaching your husband to do what's right by being an example. Husbands, love your wives. Give up your life. Give up your rights. You can never do that enough. Never. Work on your marriage. Well, my husband's not a Christian. Still, you know what? The principles still work. The principles still work. I've heard many people making excuses about why they can't do what the Bible says. You know what? I would challenge you, stop making excuses and try doing it. Try doing it. Let's go back to Timothy. Bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife. He's an example. His marriage is an example. He must be vigilant, sober, of good behavior. Let me just summarize it real quickly to say a mature Christian has self-control. A mature Christian has self-control. A mature Christian has learned to himself. He's learned to say no to the right things. You want to try changing the battery? I don't know. Last week when we changed the battery, it helped, but oh well. Okay, mature Christian has self-control. Then he says, a mature Christian is one who is given to hospitality. Hospitality. The word hospitality, the Greek word that's translated hospitality, means a love of strangers. A love of strangers. That's the Greek's definition of hospitality, a love of strangers, to be hospitable, generous to guests. The way I would put it this way, reaches out. A mature Christian reaches out. They welcome strangers. Don't forget to show hospitality to strangers, for some who have done this have entertained angels without realizing it. Some have entertained angels without realizing. Remember, what was that? What was that movie with the Prince and the Pauper or something like that? Remember that where the prince found himself to be an identical twin of some poor guy out in 17th century England or whatever, and they trade places, and the prince is just appalled at how people treat him. These people didn't realize that they had a prince in their midst. I understood that there was a story, I think it was a story about Victoria, Queen Victoria, who dressed up one day in regular clothes, regular people clothes, and was out walking through London and got caught in a rainstorm, and went up to a house and knocked on the house and asked to borrow an umbrella. And the person looked at this old lady standing there and thought, well, I might not ever see this umbrella again. So they went in their closet and got the one that was all beat up and with the spines all twisted and the holes in it and stuff, and said, here you go, Mom, and they handed this thing to this lady. And the next day, a fine carriage pulled up. And a tall, distinguished gentleman got out and handed the lady a brand new, just beautiful umbrella, and said that it was thanks from the Queen, and that she thought that this person needed a better umbrella, and the person felt, oh my gosh, if I'd known this was the Queen, I would have given her my best one. Hospitality. Love of strangers. A mature Christian reaches out. Abraham and Sarah were visited by three strangers who told them things like that they were going to have a child in Genesis 18. Turned out the three strangers were the Lord and two angels. It's a good thing they were nice to them, huh? In Luke chapter 24, Cleopas and his pal were walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus, very bummed out that their Lord was dead. And they met this stranger and just started talking with this guy, and had a good time talking with the guy, and ended up at a McDonald's or something, and they were, having cheeseburgers together, and suddenly the guy's eyes were open and it was Jesus. I don't know, I don't want to really get really weird on us or anything, but sometimes when people walk into our church and they're kind of new, what if it was an angel? Well, you know what? It doesn't have to be an angel. A mature Christian reaches out anyway. It says in verse 2, an elder is apt to teach or has the ability to teach. They may not have a gift of teaching, but they're able to teach because they know the Scriptures. Mature Christians know God's Word. Verse 3, this person is not given to wine. Now, he already kind of said that back when he said that they were, actually the word vigilant in verse 2 is the same idea, a person who doesn't drink. Not given to wine. It says, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, that means money, not patient, not a brawler, and not covetous. Let me group these things into two groups. Striker, patient, not a brawler. The word striker means, with the fists. Patient means patient. Not a brawler. The guy's not a fighter. Not a quarrelsome person. A mature Christian is a patient person. A mature Christian isn't going to beat you up. They're going to be patient with you. Read the story. Charles Spurgeon told a story about a pastor. His name was Matthew Wilkes, who was instructed by a missionary committee to interview a young man who was interested in becoming a missionary to India. And this Matthew Wilkes was an older pastor, and he had kind of a unique way of doing it. Let me read you this account. It says, this Matthew Wilkes, he wrote the young man and told him to call upon him at 6 o'clock the next morning. The brother lived many miles off, but he was at the house at 6 o'clock punctually. Mr. Wilkes did not, however, enter the room till hours later. The brother waited wonderingly, but patiently. At last, Mr. Wilkes arrived and addressed the candidate thusly.
Well, young man, so you want to be a missionary?
Yes, sir.
Do you love the Lord Jesus Christ?
Yes, sir, I hope I do.
And have you any education?
Yes, sir, a little.
Well, now, we'll try you. Can you spell cat?
The young man looked confused and hardly knew how to answer so preposterous a question. His mind evidently halted between indignation and submission, but in a moment he replied steadily, C-A-T, cat.
Very good, said Mr. Wilkes. Now, can you spell dog?
Well, our young martyr hesitated, but Mr. Wilkes said in his coolest manner, oh, never mind, don't be bashful. You spelt the other words so well, I should think you will be able to spell this. High as an attainment as it is not so elevated, but that you might do it without blushing. Youthful Job replied, D-O-G, dog. Well, that is right. I see you will do in your spelling. And now for your arithmetic. How many are twice two? And it was a wonder that Mr. Wilkes did not receive twice two after the fashion of muscular Christianity. That's the striker, the brawler, you know, to the moon. Okay. But the patient youth gave the right reply and was dismissed. Matthew Wilkes at the committee meeting said, I cordially recommend that young man. His testimonials and character I have duly examined. And besides that, I have given him a rare personal trial, such as few could bear. I tried his self-denial. He was up in the morning early. I tried his temper, and I tried his humility. He can spell cat and dog, and can tell that twice two makes four, and he will do for a missionary exceedingly well. There's something to that. A mark of maturity is patience, gentleness. I don't know how many of us would have passed that test. I'm not sure I would have. I would have said, forget this. And this old guy's a jerk. What do you mean? My time's valuable. What's the deal of making me come here at 6 in the morning and showing up 3 hours later? I mean, what's the point of this? What am I, nothing? Well, yeah, in a sense. The mark of maturity is patience. And you know what? You know what, beloved? We're all going to go through things all the time that will test our patience. And the mark of maturity is not whether I can smack the guy in the face or come back with the cruelest line that will slice them to pieces. The mark of maturity is whether I will be patient and work through it. The mark of maturity is patience. And then he says also in verse 3, let me parrot another two, he says, not greedy of filthy lucre, and then at the end he says, not covetous. Same ideas. A mature Christian isn't living for money. They have other things on their minds than how to take advantage of another person or how to make a quick buck. A mature Christian isn't living for money. Verse 4, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? Now, let me bring out the flavors of a few of these words, because I think we get the wrong idea, at least in King James. I get the wrong idea when I read this. I think, well, an elder's a guy who's really mean, and, you know, cracks the whip, and it's, you know, back, children, back, you know, line up, children, bow to father, you know, and the children tremble in fear when their father comes. You know what? That's not the words here. That's not the words here. One who ruleth well his own house. Couple things. The word well, it's a word that I like to translate most of the time as beautiful. It means beautifully, finely, excellently, well, rightly, so that there's no room for blame. Nobly, commendably. One who rules his house commendably, well, beautifully, does a fine job. Not a stern, mean, tough job, but a beautiful job. It says that he ruleth his own house. Even the word ruleth gives you the wrong idea. The word means to set or place over, to be over. That's correct. But to superintend, to preside over, to be a protector or a guardian. So this is not the word, the Greek word despotes, where we get despot, you know, the mean tyrant of a father. That's not the picture here. It is a father who is in charge, yes. It is a father who guards over and protects his family, and who does a fine job at it. Having his children in subjection with all gravity. Gravity. The NIV correctly translates it respect. New American Standard also correctly translates it dignity, honor, purity. Now, I have seen people who, what is it? He says, men who desire the office of a bishop. I've seen them take this verse and get out the whip and whoosh, you know, they're going to talk to the church. People are coming over. Children, you better shape up. Chain them to the bedposts, you know, and make them scrub all the toilets, you know, and all this kind of stuff. You know, I've seen people react this way. And, you know, I think it's one-sided. I think you've only got half of the thing going here. Because to do a well job, a fine job, a beautiful job in your family, there's got to be the balance of discipline and love. It's got to have both things involved. And I think, I'm not an expert. I haven't taken my three boys through teenagehood yet. And so some of you are questioning me, and rightfully so. I understand that. I understand that. I'm going to have lots of learning ahead of me. But I got to tell you, gang, that it's a wonderful thing to see how children respond not only to firm discipline, but to love. And to see those two things mixed. A mature Christian has his family in order. That means a mature Christian spends time with his family. It's hard to do that when you're not around, Dad. It's hard to do that. That is a father's responsibility. One that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. Verse 5. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? That's an interesting comparison. Interesting comparison. And two little people out of here. Number one is this. The church ought to be like a family. That's a good picture of what the church ought to be like. It ought to be like a big family, a big happy family. That's. I know some of us know what it's like in families where it's not a happy family. It's a family, but it's not a happy family. Well, hopefully the church will be a happy family. And if you can get the knack of taking care of a family, then you can get the knack of taking care of a church. Because you know what? It kind of works the same way. It kind of works the same way. Second lesson here I want to say is this. Faithfulness starts where you're at. Faithfulness starts where you're at. See, what Paul is saying is this. He's saying to his pal Timothy, look, one of the ways you can test and see if a guy is ready to be a leader is whether he's doing this thing right. And that is he being a good dad? Is he being a good husband? Does he have the home right? Because if he's gotten that right, then he's a faithful man. And he'll be able to do the other thing right. See, it's easy to want to skip steps along the way. We can kind of become enamored with the idea of being a leader. I think I see things in the church that I can help out with, you know, and stuff. But we want to skip what's already on our plate. And if you're a dad, if you're a husband, you can't skip that. Because that's where it starts. That's where faithfulness starts. I have learned the hard way at Christmas. You know, we're coming up to Christmas, folks, right? You know, and on December 25th, all those boxes are ripped and torn open, you know, and the children start pulling out the pieces and they say, Dad, I want this thing put together now. You know, I remember one year with, I don't remember, it was a birthday or Christmas or something. I remember, you know, we had this really cool Nerf gun, and I just thought, I can do this. You know, and I saw the picture in the box, looked at the parts, and there we go. You know what? I put it together wrong. And those stupid Nerf people have these things designed that when you pop them in, you can't get them out. And so my child had to live with this thing not working correctly for a long time. Why? Because I didn't take it one step at a time. I didn't read the directions. I didn't go one step after the other. And gang, one of the steps of maturity is taking care of your home now. If your home isn't together now, you're not going to be ready for the other thing. Jesus said in Luke 16:10, he said, unless you are faithful in small matters, you won't be faithful in large ones. If you cheat even a little, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. And if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who will trust you with the true riches of heaven? And if you are not faithful with other people's money, why should you be trusted with money of your own? See, one of the things that we would want to look for in leaders in the church as mature people is, have they taken care of the little things in their life? Now he says, verse 6, not a novice. Not a novice. The word means somebody that's newly planted, a new convert, a new believer. For a leader in the church, they should not be a new believer. Why? Because a mature Christian has stood the test of time. A mature Christian has stood the test of time. Maturity takes time. It takes time. Well, I've been a Christian. I haven't sinned this particular sin in 10 days. Well, I want to see if you can go 10 years. If you've been a Christian any length of time, I think you got a little bit grasp of what I'm talking about. Because we go through these cycles, these ups and downs sometimes, don't we? And see, it's not about do you become a leader when you're at the peak of a cycle. No, it's whether you have learned to mellow the cycles out over time. And so that you're up all the time. And not up and then... And then next week you're supposed to be preaching in the morning, and then but you can't because there's a ball game on. Well, hold on a second. You know, no. Maturity takes time. Lest being filled, lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. The word lifted up with pride, it's got a picture in the word that it means to raise a smoke, to wrap in a mist. It's the idea of being puffed up with pride. It's just a bunch of smoke. They're just blowing smoke at me. Now that's what pride is like. It's just nothing but a bunch of smoke. And a person gets all puffed up. A mature Christian stays humble. A mature Christian stays humble. Paul is suggesting that when a person is lifted up too quickly, they run into a risk of becoming arrogant and proud. It doesn't have to be that way. But that's going to lead to disaster. A mature Christian is one who learns to keep a finger on his own pride and has to work at keeping it in check. Because even the most mature Christians can get totally prided out. And stays humble. Lastly, verse 7, moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach in the snare of the devil. He must have a good report. There's that beautiful word again. He must have a beautiful testimony with people who aren't Christians. A mature Christian has a good reputation in the world. One of the truest tests of your maturity is not how you act at church, but how you act away from church. I'm becoming a little cynical sometimes because I've been disappointed so many times by people who look good in church. And then I find out that outside of church, they look bad. They are a mess outside of church. And see, it's maturity is not whether you can impress people who know that you're Christians. But a mark of maturity is, are you a consistent Christian? Whether you're with believers or unbelievers, whether you're in church or outside of church, that's a mark of maturity. See, maturity as a Christian, it's not a game. It's not an act. It's nothing you can put on to just impress people for a little while so you get a little position in the church and get your name in the bulletin and all that kind of stuff, you know? That's not what it's about. Maturity is learning to be like Jesus more and more all the time. All the time. Because Jesus wants to change your life. He doesn't want to just make you look good in front of a few people. He wants to change all of your life, all of the time. Let's pray. We're going to have communion this morning. And so we're going to stop here. This evening, we're going to be going through 1 Timothy chapters 1, 2, and 3 tonight.